Welcome. My name is Katie Winkler, and I'm the author of what I'm calling a poddle, a podcasted novel. This is a work in progress, so I hope you will forgive the technical glitches and flaws as I learn new skills as well as revise and edit my work. Thank you for listening. I hope you laugh some and maybe shed a few good tears too. Here we go. Campus, a novel that wants to be a musical by Katie Winkler. Chapter 3, Part 2. If you will recall, Jack Spratt, All-American Boy, had just finished singing his lively, character-establishing song and had escaped his doting mother with promises to come home for lunch to have some apple pie. Now he was standing in front of Mrs. McBride's table, ready to register. Only Mrs. McBride wasn't there. He looked around to see where she was, which was odd, because he had never met her before, and only knew it was Mrs. McBride's table because there was her name there, on a poster board cutout written in black marker by one of the Student Government Association senators. At least he thought it said McBride. Maybe it said McBraid. He couldn't be sure. He didn't see her anywhere or anyone who looked remotely like a teacher. He did notice enough to regret that he had agreed to go home for lunch for that tomato sandwich because he saw a sign announcing that it was free sub day today, as well as club rush and advising and registration. You know about free sub day, don't you? No? Well, let me explain. I'm good at that. Students got theirs for free. If the faculty and staff wanted to eat, then they had to sign up for a time slot to serve or to pick up the 20-foot subs, meat, I'm not sure what kind, and vegetarian. These sandwiches were then sliced into exactly 2-inch slices, no bigger or smaller. Mrs. Sabowski had a measuring stick. Plastic serving gloves were provided at only 5 cents per glove, and the sandwich was free for those who served on the line for only a 30-minute shift, leaving 15 minutes to eat at one of the tables if the faculty or staff member sat and conversed with at least 5 students. If the faculty or staff member did not sign up for a time to serve, then he or she had to return to their advising registration station in the sun once they picked up their 2-inch slice of sub at only $5.25, including a mini cola, a mini bag of chips, and a mini chocolate chip cookie. By the way, students had to pay extra for the accoutrements. Only the sub was free, of course. Anyway, $5.25 was a bargain for all faculty who had on their official faculty staff ID badge attached to an official campus Lanyard. No substitute Lanyards allowed. Each student or faculty member was given a ticket for one slice with no additional slices allowed. So, of course, on this particular sort of free sub day, the zombies were going about extorting their fellow students to get extra slices because they needed it. That time of day, the zombies always got the munchies. As Jack looked about for a teacherly looking person, he saw students in clumps munching on their pizza. What? Pizza? I thought they were subs. I gotta stop now. As Jack looked about for a teacherly looking person, he saw students in clumps munching on their sub slices and mini things, unless the zombies had already gotten to them. Some were sitting around different tables that represented various clubs. There was a table for the Rotarians, of course, the Honor Society Chi Psi Omega Zeta Alpha Phi. There was the Ridgeback Riders, the Blue Ridgebacks Glee Club, and of course, the Fellowship of Understanding the Need for Diverse and Integrated Almost Evangelical Students. Then Jack glanced at the edge of the quad and saw her. She was waiting just like him, looking around nervously just like him, talking on her cell phone, not just like him because he didn't own a cell phone. This girl, this one that was bound to steal his heart in just a few more pages, I bet you could see that coming, wore jeans and a simple black t-shirt that said, "Well-behaved women rarely make history," in a semicircle over and beneath an Art Deco portrait of a woman whose long hair was piled artfully disheveled on top of her head. Jack's glance was one that would change his life. He stood there watching this vision in the worldly liberal feminist t-shirt, unable to take his eyes off her. He couldn't hear what she had to say, but I'll share it with you. "All right, I'll be there as soon as I can, okay?" "Come on, how many times have I asked you to keep her? And how many times have I kept your kids?" "That's right. Now I just gotta register for these classes and then I'll bring the car home, okay?" "I don't know how long. Not more than an hour or two, I hope, okay?" She walked up to another registration table, standing behind Corey Hollifell III. She didn't know it was Corey. If she had, she would not have remained there, not for a second. "Now a little about this kid, Corey. He comes from a long line of vampires here in Blue Ridge County. From their mansion on Smoothie Rock, up on the mountain outside of Dog Hobble, Corey's people have been sucking the citizenry dry with impunity for generations." Corey Hollifell II would tell you, yes, his family fed off the people, but the Hollifelds earned every drop because their tax dollars paid for this lazy dog hobble rabble to get a 2-year degree in order to make $2 an hour above minimum wage at one of their factories, groceries, wineries, or creameries. There was also the toy factory, of course. "I'm sorry to say, not really, call me a horrible person, but I don't actually care at all, that Corey had been some disappointment to both Mr. and Mrs. Hollifell II. Their son had, of course, been sent from his school in Asheville to the flagship of North Carolina public higher educational system, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Along with Duke, one of the most prestigious Ivy League of the South schools. But Chapel Hill was a bit easier on the pocketbook. He was to become a pharmacist. Corey had no desire to be a pharmacist. His study of chemicals leaned in a less legal direction. But to UNC Chapel Hill he went, and for the first semester was making his way through pretty well, thanks to WeWriteEssaysSoYouDon'tHaveTo.com, only $50 for at least a C. However, his education became more expensive than his parents bargained for, and I mean bargained for. Especially when Corey encountered a particularly feisty old biochemistry professor who couldn't be persuaded to overlook the fact that he was receiving text at regular intervals during the midterm exam. Inexplicably, he was expelled. Corey just didn't think that this kind of thing would ever happen to a vampire. Now, that happened semester before last. So here he found himself standing in line at the College of Applied Purposes, United in Simplicity, for the second semester, much against his will. But Mummy and Daddy, united against him despite their divorce 15 years before, said it was either go to community college or get a job, which sucked more than he did on a good night. Furthermore, not going to campus would put at substantial risk his current living arrangements. You see, upon his return from the Piedmont, Corey had convinced his dad that he needed an apartment of his own. Being a healthy American vampire, wink, wink, you know, you know how you were at my age, Dad. The resulting 2-bedroom, 2-bath apartment was built on the side of the house, but Corey insisted on his own private entrance and a kitchen of his own, where Roxanne, the hot little au pair from the Ukraine, who took care of his baby brothers, his father's third wife's children, and did some light housekeeping, came in 3 times a week to make him dinner, and for just a few bucks more gave him a massage. He couldn't give that up. Hence the standing in line in front of this battle-axe English teacher, the same one who tortured him last semester. He couldn't remember her name, but I know it well. It's Whitaker, with 2 T's. The battle-axe was short, with glasses, hunched over her papers and small slice of half-eaten sub like a winged crone. Not a simile, real battered wings. Behind her, Corey saw another short, dumpy one. Young, no wings, must be one of the new teachers. But a gnome? Oh, right, this is a community college, gnomes and fairies. Nevertheless, his dad said make a good impression. Corey would hit both of them full on with his charm. The ladies love the vampires. That's what Dad said, and Dad was always right. He straightened his tie, smoothed his hair, and cleared his throat. Mrs. Whitaker, he said in his sexiest voice, the one that drove all of the girls wild. How are you doing this fine day? And who is this lovely lady sitting behind you? He smiled at the gnome, who just sat there with her little hands folded in her little lap. Neither one seemed to notice him. I was wondering if I could talk to you. Okay, full disclosure. I am the narrator. This story is not about me, but I am Mrs. Whitaker. I admit it, but just forget I said that. Oh, and the gnome sitting behind me, that's Melody, the young teacher you met during the overture. She's been assigned to me, my mentee, they say. It's a great honor, they say. Only requires a wee bit of documentation, but this will take hours, days, only a few weekends of work. Don't want to take time away from the students, but I gave the same protest the last 4 times to no avail. I didn't even fight it this time. But forgive me for not drumming up too much enthusiasm. But I didn't know then what I know now. I didn't know that Melody would... But enough about me. Mrs. Whitaker continued to look down at her registration scrolls, pretending that she cared about this mundane work. But what she really cared about is finding out new promising students to bring into the fold. Her fold. Extra special. You see, Mrs. Whitaker is a fairy god teacher. There aren't many of them left in the world. Teachers who truly and deeply care that students are successful in acquiring the ancient learning of the liberal arts. There are too few of them to take on many proteges, so they had to be particularly choosy. Corey was not a candidate, but he was lined up with the others, and although she thought, glancing up at him, she would like to smack that superior, condescending grin off his skinny vampire face, she refrained. He was like any other student. She ran her finger down the scroll and said, "I'm at your service, young man. The young woman behind me is the newest member of our ranks." Still not looking up. "Her name is Ms. Melody Becker." "Hello, Melody." Now Mrs. Whitaker did look up. "You will be well advised that Ms. Becker is under my protection and should be shown the same respect that you give to me. Is that understood, Mr. Hollifield?" You remember me. "From last semester." Mrs. Whitaker looked up and gave a wry smile. "How can I help you, Mr. Hollifield?" "You can call me Corey. I'd rather not. But it's an old family name. Is it? Corey felt she was warming to him and leaned across the table. Because, as you recall, I come from an old, old, old family. Mrs. Whitaker shifted in her seat. That's nice. From around here. Oh, yes, I remember now. In fact, my old family that has been in this area for generations and has high hopes for me to transfer back to Chapel Hill once I pull my grades up was quite disappointed that I got a D in English last semester and an F in biochemistry. Stupid old cow. I mean, the biochemistry professor who said I was texting your mother. She looked up at him, almost the limit of her endurance. She turned to Melody. Miss Becker, the gnome may have been dozing off. She jumped up out of her seat, tipping this chair over and sending campus swag crashing to the ground. Mrs. Whitaker closed her eyes. Just the distraction Corey needed. Oh, I'll help you, Miss Becker. Corey leapt to the young teacher's aid, down on his hands and knees, picking up pads of paper, pens, chip clips, and mints, all embossed with the new logo of four interconnecting rings of various bright colors with the letters CAMP and US in the middle of the rings. In the middle of those four rings, the word U connected all of them. This was hard to be seen on the mints, even though they were bigger than the average giveaway mints, thanks to a generous donation from the Toy Factory. In return, the Toy Factory's new logo appeared on the other side of all of the swag. You never get something for nothing these days. Corey gathered up all the giveaways and arranged them oh so neatly on the table. There you go. Thank you, Mr. Hollifield. Melody was standing there, flushing blue as gnomes do. I'm so sorry, Miss Whitaker. What was it you needed? Just some water. It's so hot and I'm dreadfully thirsty. She fanned herself with a stack of flyers advertising the Toy Factory's showroom sale. Could you get me a bottle of water? Of course, Mrs. Whitaker. Where might I find these water bottles? At the Toy Factory's booth over there near the podium. Mrs. Whitaker pointed to the center of the quad where the sound tech students were preparing for the next number. Big red tent with a demonic looking bear and a rocking chair. They have some coolers. Oh, you'll need this. She handed her a $5 bill. Buy yourself a bottle too. But they aren't free? Oh, okay, I'll be right back. Corey realized then that he wasn't in control of the situation. This wasn't like him. I wasn't cheating, he said a bit too forcefully after the little gnome had trotted off. No one made it clear to me that texting my mother was a crime. Mrs. Whitaker blinked. What are you talking about, Mr. Hollifield? The chemistry test at Chapel Hill. I wasn't cheating last semester either. It's all a lie. I never cheated. Just texting. Nowhere on the syllabus did it say I couldn't text during the test. He was near tears. I just didn't know what I was doing. Oh, me, oh, my. Oh, that's too bad. That sounded genuine. Maybe he was sucking her back in. He lifted his head. Yeah, my dad. You know my dad. Corey L. Hollifield II. You know, he owns a lot of businesses here in Blue Ridge County and and owns an interest in the toy factory. Yeah, and he's on the board of trustees at the bank and here at the college, too. And he's a lawyer. I see, quite the vampire. Did you want to register, Mr. Hollifield? Please call me Corey. As you wish. Then looking at the old fairy's face, he could tell that neither his go-to charm nor his pitiful shtick was doing the trick. Time to change tactics once again. Thanks. He came around the table, bent down, a little too close to her neck, she thought. But she didn't move a muscle. My dad wasn't too happy about that D in your... You made that clear, Mr. Hollifield. Yeah, they said that anybody who flunked out of Chapel Hill ought to be able to pass an English course at this little old community college. Well, I'm not quite following your logic, Corey, but you know a D is a passing grade. Yeah, but Mummy says it won't transfer. Your mother is correct. So why'd you give me a D? Mrs. Whittaker should have been annoyed, but instead she was amused. Just how far would the little bloodsucker push it? I didn't give you a D, Corey. You earned it. Now, if you'll just let me know how I can help you today. She looked down at her papers again, pen in hand, and the little miscreant dared to put his hand on hers. But I said I would do extra credit. She pulled her hand away and pushed him from her. 2 days after grades were posted, he stood back up. So, you're penalizing me for not going in and checking my grades. Again, your logic or the lack thereof escapes me. I don't accept any extra credit in my classes, ever. Not before the grades are posted or after. You are in college. You either do the work I assign you to the level I expect or you do not. So, will you change my grade? She looked up into his bloodshot eyes. I will not. The line behind the privileged one continued to grow, but Corey stood there staring at her. She stared at him. Someone in the line, it sounded like the high squeaky voice of a nymph, said, "Come on, let's go. I gotta get back to the river or I'm gonna dry up completely." Mrs. Whittaker continued to stare, but handed him some papers. "Here are the registration papers. All the help you need is right at your fingertips now that we have online registration. Please move along." "But I need to make C's in all my classes or my parents won't let me go back to Chapel Hill and I'll have to stay here at this shitty college." "I feel for you. I really do. Chapel Hill is a fine school, but I can't help you." She raised a gnarled hand to point the way down the line. "Mummy says you could change the grade if you wanted. She said one of her teachers changed the grade for her when she went here because she got knocked up with me and her parents wouldn't let her go back to Chapel Hill." "Ah, another family tradition, eh? Well, let me put it this way. Even if I could help you, I wouldn't. Why?" Mrs. Whittaker pushed her chair back, scraping it against the cement of the sidewalk where her table stood in the bright sun. There was no tent to guard the faculty and students from the blazing sun. Dr. Dagg had not deemed it worthy of the expense. Leather tents were expensive, and those cobbler elves that built and distributed them were little thieves. The little fairy woman looked up at Corey, standing tall, undeterred by the sun, it seemed. "Because I don't want to," she said, just as Melody returned with the drink. Corey stared at her for a few more seconds, but the little woman wouldn't back down. She just took the drink from Melody, opened it, and drank the whole thing. Finally, Corey turned toward Jill, who had gotten in line behind him, and said under his breath, "Which?" Jill looked surprised but said nothing. Corey smiled. "No, I wasn't talking about you." He grabbed her arm. "Jill, isn't it? Haven't seen you since high school. Where you been?" Jill tried to pull away. I'm sort of in a hurry." Corey, as usual, was undaunted when he was on the hunt. "Come on, Jill. Don't be that way." He pulled her closer. "Why is that?" Let me go." But Corey didn't move, didn't let go of Jill's arm. Then he heard a voice. Mrs. Whitaker's voice. "Move along now, Corey. People are waiting behind you." It was the voice of the one who had taught for 30 years, one whose daughter used to say that her mom's voice would take the mean out of anybody. You heard that voice, and you just wanted to do better. "I said, people are waiting." Corey gave a smirk and leaned over way too close to Jill, as he was wont to do. "See you later," he whispered in her ear. She grimaced and pulled away. Corey sauntered over to his friends, or his minions, better called. They hung around him because he had money, and even though he was a vampire and oh so good at sucking people dry, he never noticed that he was drier than anyone. The leeches had attached and wouldn't let go. Mrs. Whitaker was shaking her head as Jill came up to the table. "I'm sorry about that. Can I help you?" "Yes, ma'am. I just need to register for classes." Mrs. Whitaker put down her pen, picked up her paper fan, and began vigorously fanning herself. It didn't do much good. She sat back and looked at Jill. She was petite, pretty, brunette, not particularly beautiful, but a pleasant face. She was dressed in blue jeans and a long t-shirt. She smiled at the saying written there, "Laurel Thatcher Ulrich." "Excuse me?" said Jill, confused. "Your t-shirt. Well-behaved women rarely make history. Some attribute that saying to Eleanor Roosevelt or Marilyn Monroe. Even Anne Boleyn." She waved her hand in a gesture of dismissal. "Ridiculous." Jill was still confused. Mrs. Whitaker leaned towards the girl. "It's true. Laurel Thatcher Ulrich wrote a paper entitled A Midwife's Tale, The Life of Martha Ballard, based on her diary 1785 to 1812. Ulrich had reprinted and extensively commented on the diary entries of an ordinary midwife in Maine, who also acted as a healer. The book illuminated the medical practices and sexual attitudes of the era and was awarded a Pulitzer Prize and a Bancroft Prize." "Have you been a student here before?" "Excuse me? Have you ever been a student here at campus?"
Yes, 2 years ago.
"I thought so. I never forget a face. Did I have you in class?"
"Oh, no, I would have remembered you."
"That's true, you would have." Mrs. Whitaker handed Jill a flyer. "Here's everything that you need to register. Things have changed some since you were here last. And not necessarily for the better, if you know what I mean. Students register for class online now." Jill looked around. The line behind her was getting antsy. But can't you register me? You see, we like students to learn how to use the system first thing. But don't worry. She handed Jill another form. "Fill out this questionnaire and list your classes. Then come back and I'll get you started at one of the computers over here." But Mrs. Whitaker didn't have time for this. She looked at the line snaking across the commons. She looked at the girl. Then she saw it. There was something in her eyes, something she had seen before. "Tell me, why are you here?" Jill wondered why she had thought she could do it. Why she could come back to school.
Excuse me? Mrs. Whitaker didn't like pushing the young woman, but it had to be done. Surely you know why. Why did you come back to the school? It's a simple question. Why did you come back to school? Why do you need to know? Why? Tell me why, Jill. Jill thought, why was she so reluctant to say? She looked at the little woman. Why should she care what she thinks? She was nothing but an English teacher, a little short, dumpy fairy god teacher with tattered wings and piercing blue eyes that looked into her very soul. Because I have a little girl. How old? Jill felt everything had changed. Everything. It was gonna be okay because of Sarah. My daughter is two. She's two. What's her name? Sarah. Her name is Sarah Jane. Mrs. Whitaker had found one. She looked again into the girl's brown eyes and knew. She had found one indeed. The rest of these questions were just a formality. She couldn't wait to tell Mrs. McBride. And you want to make your life better so you can make hers better. Is that right? That's right. Mrs. Whitaker took out her little blue pouch and grabbed a handful of fairy dust. Appalachian fairies don't carry dust like the glitter of fancier fairies. They are woodland creatures, springing from the moss and ferns, trillium and bee balm. Their dust is finely ground gneiss, schist, granite, flecks of mica, metamorphosed sandstone, siltstone and shale, limestone and dolomite from the Anakista Formation and from the floor of Cade's Cove, below the Great Smoky Fault. Powerful minerals from the oldest mountain range in the world. Mrs. Whitaker grabbed a handful of the fairy dust and sprinkled it over the girl who knew nothing of the gift, of the power it would bring her. Yes, I want to make her life better. Jill took the papers. And you will. Now register for your classes. Jill was about to say more, but Mrs. Whitaker put a hand up to silence her. I will help you when you need it. I promise. There was a small table with one seat unoccupied, so Jill took the papers and began to fill out the form. It was long and complicated and seemed a perfect waste of time. Corey the vampire, staying true to his narcissistic vampire ways, sauntered over and leaned heavily on the table. Jill could smell his blood-scented breath. Hey again, Jill, he said, leaning heavily on the fragile table. She said nothing. He placed one pale finger on the papers. Aren't you gonna say hi? She said nothing. I could give you a little campus tour. She pulled the papers out from under the finger and turned away from him. No, thank you. I've been to school here before. He pushed the hapless troll from his seat, turned the chair around and sat on it, propping his elbows on the back of the chair and ogled Jill. Oh yeah, that's right. I heard that. I heard that you did come here and other things. Jill said nothing. Heard you liked to score even more in college than you did in high school, and that you'd do just about anything to score. If you know what I mean. He ran his finger up her arm and she tried to move away from him. I don't do that no more. I just want to go to school. What'd you do, Jill? Did you find God? Come on, let's just have a little fun like we used to, remember? Leave me alone. Other Students were beginning to look at her. This was a mistake, a mistake. In the glen where she lived in her little house, her little three-room house in the glen. No one bothered her, just her and her little girl, Sarah. But these men, they wouldn't leave her alone. Always men wanting her, but not wanting her, not really. Just get away. Come on. I'll show you how to get those classes you want. I just want to be your friend. He grabbed her. Jill cried out and looked around, but no one came to help her. She looked for Mrs. Whitaker, but she was surrounded by students and couldn't hear her. No, 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 it couldn't happen again. This time she had come prepared. Out of her pocket, Jill took a cross and a string of garlic with one hand. With her other, she grabbed Corey's crotch. You get your hands off me, or I'll let all your vampire friends and those zombies over there know how you tried but failed with me time and time again, if you know what I mean. Now go back to your buddies. Tell them whatever little fairy tale you want, but leave me the hell alone before I squeeze so tight you'll holler, Mama. Corey crouched over and moved back to his friends, laughing in a half-hearted way, making light of it all. Jill moved to the far end of the commons where the big oak could hide her shame and began singing. I know it's crazy, but she did it because this novel about this crazy fantasy Appalachian campus really wants to be a musical. Yes, it does. I was born here, called it home here, just right down the street at home. But I don't want to talk about home. I went to school here, went through hell here, just right down the street. The boys, but I don't want to talk about boys, or booze, or bruises, or fear. No more fear. It's time for letting loose. Nothing's gonna stop me now. It's me who will choose for my baby girl and me. I'm the one who'll set us free. Gonna get my degree, get out of this town. Getting the hell out of here. No more fear. It's time for taking back all of those forgotten dreams. The things I've always lacked. Gotta leave it far behind me. For Sarah's sake, I will be free. Gonna get my degree, get out of this town. Getting the hell out of here. No more fear. Do you know how fast you fall? Do you know how soon you lose it all? All I could do was cry, but it's time to leave this place or die. It's time for letting loose. Nothing's gonna stop me now. It's time for breaking free. Gonna get my degree, get out of this town. I'm getting the hell out of here. It's time for letting loose. Nothing's gonna stop me now. It's time for breaking free. Gonna get my degree, then Sarah and me, we're getting the hell out of here. no more fear.
Many thanks to all those who made this episode possible. Technical advisor, Hannah Winkler. Background music supplied by Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast. Thanks to supporters Angela Cantola and Don Wallace, Jennifer and David Treadway, my wonderful husband, John, along with all of you wonderful folks who are taking this journey with me. Come back for the next episode of Campus, the novel that wants to be a musical.